Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. Blake Topmeyer with John Adams, the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, the Vols are closing the gap with Alabama, according to Jeremy Pruitt. You feel like we're closing the gap with anybody?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I think I look at the podcast on our network. I believe everybody else is trying to close the gap on us. And I don't see it happening much more than it is between Tennessee and Alabama, despite Jeremy's optimism. I didn't see a gap closing. I just saw a lot of wide open spaces for receivers in the Tennessee secondary and a lot of missed tackles, as you pointed out in your story. Trying to tackle Najee Harris is definitely a chore, and he always goes forward. I thought it was really good that you pointed out the linebacking deficiencies in that game.
You know, a subplot of that game, John, I don't know that this was Tennessee's biggest issue in the 48-17 loss to Alabama, but it was one of the issues. Very conservative play calling from Tennessee. There was several third and medium or third and long scenarios where they handed the ball off, seemed fairly content to punt. One truly curious set of play calling after Tennessee recovered a fumble at Alabama's 48-yard line. They had two runs that totaled negative 2 yards, and then the jet sweep that Jim Chaney has fallen in love with got 4 yards, and then they punted. And, you know, the week before, after the Kentucky game, Jeremy Pruitt criticized the play calling, shifted to, I think, more obviously a conservative approach against Alabama. What do you make of the way Jim Chaney is handling this offense this season? And did you see Saturday as maybe a shift to Jeremy Pruitt's offensive philosophy?
Oh, it was a huge shift. I cut Jim Chaney a lot of slack on this. I don't know exactly what he's supposed to do. He has a quarterback that's just on a turnover binge. You have an offensive line that's playing nowhere near up to its expectations. Net minus 1 yard rushing against Georgia, can't always protect its quarterback. And Jared Garantano, of course, had an awful day against Kentucky. So then your head coach second guesses your call for across the field pass from Garantano, which I didn't think was the greatest call either. But when your head coach is second guessing you, that makes it doubly tough. Then you got to worry about, well, is this what he wants? You only got a few seconds to do this. And I know he's supposed to set the standard, and you operate within that standard. Easily said, you can't handcuff your play caller. So another thing that was a factor in that, to me, Tennessee went into that game, and this is Jeremy Pruitt, as a head coach thinking, we don't want to get embarrassed. He got embarrassed anyway, but it didn't lose by 40 or 50, which I think was a possibility. So we're just going to be very conservative. We're not trying to win the game. We're just trying to hold the score down as much as possible, i.e. a field goal attempt from the 15 or 16-yard line early in the game when you're down 14-0. And it was apparent to anybody that had seen as much as 5 minutes of the game that you will not beat Alabama with field goals. So that to me was basically, that was raising a white flag and say, hey, guys, we're not trying to beat you. Just go easy on us, okay? You're going to be number two anyway. You're not catching Clemson no matter how badly you beat us. So just go easy on us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It did really seem like a game plan that was designed to keep Tennessee from losing by 50 rather than designed to, you know, try to, you know, have some hope of pulling off an upset. We've seen, though, already Jeremy Pruitt's made one change on his coaching staff, and in the firing of Jimmy Brumbaugh after the Kentucky game as defensive line coach. Jeremy Pruitt now coaching the defensive line himself. He gave himself high marks for his performance last week. But now with the offense struggling, I think sort of the attention turns there. John, should there be any thought about the possibility of taking play calling duties away from Jim Chaney? You know, T. Martin has play calling experience on this staff, did it some at USC. Joe Osovet, tight ends coach, was a longtime head coach at junior college level where he called the offense. Should there be any thought to pivoting to one of those guys, pivoting from Jim Chaney to T. Martin?
I can't see that happening. I mean, I don't see where that would solve anything. Jim Chaney's had a lot of success through the years. He's been in a lot of places. He's run different kinds of offenses. He was running Georgia's offense, I guess, when it was about to almost won a national championship. So, yeah, I think he's pretty versatile in his play calling. The thing with T. Martin was a nice addition to Tennessee's staff. There's no doubt about that. Knows the program, knows the area. He's got recruiting ties, connections all over the country. He's an assistant head coach. I would think he would make a better head coach than he would an offensive coordinator for whatever reason. He tried that with Southern Cal. He was offensive coordinator. He was calling the plays. They might have had a co-offensive coordinator too. But Clay Helton took those duties away from him. So that's hardly an endorsement. Southern Cal football isn't exactly flourishing. So if you're thinking about doing that, I mean, it would just be to get a change. And I don't see where that would be a positive change. I don't think T. Martin's will leave just because you don't make him the play caller. So who wants to call plays for this offense? I don't want that on my resume if I'm an assistant coach. Are you kidding me? And whether you throw it all the way across the field or not to gain 4 yards, exactly what are you going to do? Tennessee doesn't trust its quarterback right now and doesn't have a better option, so there we are.
You know, and something that Mike Wilson and I touched on briefly and during last week's podcast when you were out on assignment, John, you know, with Jim Chaney, if he's not calling the plays, what else is he doing? You know, he's getting paid $1.6 million, one of the highest paid assistant coaches in the country. He doesn't coach a position group. He's having no positive impact on the quarterbacks. So if he's not calling the plays, I mean, he's earning $6.6 million to do what exactly? I guess you could have him go over there and work with the defensive line a little bit since they don't have a defensive line coach anymore. But, I mean, really, the whole reason he's on the staff is to call plays. So if you take that away from him, you might as well just show him the door, which doesn't seem like a realistic possibility for Tennessee. So I think the verdict is you got to stick with Jim Chaney as your play caller and get it figured out.
Yeah, you want to pay another coach not to coach? Of course, that's kind of Tennessee's MO. Yeah, with Chaney, I tell you what, Jim Chaney could coach the offensive line, and I think they need some help there, so maybe that would be an option. But I just don't think there's a better option right now than him. I just think he's in a really difficult situation. He's not calling plays for Matt Jones, and he's not handing the ball to Najee Harris or throwing it to Devontae Smith. What if you were hired as offensive coordinator right now? You've got an open date week, most of it next week for Arkansas. What would you be thinking about? What plays would you want to call with this offense against Team X, against anybody?
As Tennessee's offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I would never take the job, John, because
what if we offered you $2 million a year?
Well, I'd take the job then. Do I already have an offensive coordinator job? Because I don't think any offensive coordinator in the country, working for Jeremy Pruitt as an offensive coordinator is not an appealing job. This is the second time now. You know, Tyson Helton came here and had this track record as an aggressive offensive coordinator. He leaves, and the first thing he says at Western Kentucky is, you know, we're going to put on a show here. Basically, if we lose, we're going to lose, you know, trying to be exciting. Well, during his one season as Tennessee's offensive coordinator in the first year under Jeremy Pruitt, that offense was anything but. It was about as conservative and vanilla as an offense could be, plodding, run heavy. And by the end of the year, Jeremy Pruitt was holding an offensive play sheet on the sideline, and Jeremy Pruitt's a defensive coach. And then now, you know, just 4 games into Jim Chaney's tenure as an offensive coordinator, Jeremy Pruitt was criticizing his play calling after a loss against Kentucky, and perhaps rightfully so. I mean, I don't know that the play calling was particularly good that game, but point being, if you're a sitting offensive coordinator, I'm not sure why you'd want anything to do with this job. We'll be right back.
When Josh Palmer dropped that long touchdown pass, Coach Pruitt sure needed a moment to chill out. Hi, this is Rob for Coors Light. It seems like with everything that's going on in our world today, we all need a moment to just chill out. And there's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. Over the last few months, we've gone from no sports to sports on television everywhere. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or any team. So whether you're watching the Vols or the World Championship of Cornhole, crack open the mountain cold refreshment of Coors Light. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, a perfect moment to unwind. And for me, I reach for a Coors Light whenever I'm home and the game is on. So make sure your refrigerator is stocked with cold Coors Light. When I need to unwind, Coors Light is the one I choose. Get Coors Light in the new look, delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Okay, let's say you're offense coordinator at Vanderbilt. You're making $650,000 a year. You're offense coordinator there. You're struggling to get a first down against anybody.
I've taken a job. It looks pretty good to me now. If they fire me, I get a nice severance package. I guess to answer your question then, I mean, I think you have to lean on the run, which Tennessee was trying to do against Alabama. You have to dial up some deep shots, which I thought they did some of against Alabama. I think they should do more of that. But I think the one thing I would probably do, it's always so easy to be that armchair offensive coordinator. It's the second most easy thing to criticize behind the quarterbacks. But with that caveat out of the way, I do think they could do some more things to help their quarterbacks, such as, you know, Alabama completed 5 screen passes during that game. And I don't think Mac Jones needs a lot of help, but nonetheless, they dialed up several screen passes. And, you know, I think 4 out of the 5 of them were somewhat to fairly productive plays. Tennessee went through that entire game, didn't call a single screen pass. And you really haven't seen many screens all season. So I think you could incorporate some more screens, help your quarterback out a little bit that way. I also think personnel, you could help your offense out by changing the personnel a little bit at the wide receiver position. One thing Garantano has never really had the opportunity to work with throughout his career is speed. This has not been a fast receiving core really since he's been here. You've had these big, slow possession receivers like a Juwan Jennings.
They aren't all slow. I mean, they're just not fast.
You know, you look at it, this group, and Palmer's got decent speed, and he's the one guy Garantano throws to all the time. But Brandon Johnson's not going to blow past anybody off the line. Cedric Tillman isn't going to beat anybody. Jacob Warren is your tight end. I guess Bayless Jones has pretty good speed. I think really the best way to use him, though, is with screens and jet sweeps. I don't know that he's really much of a route runner, but I guess the point being, I think I would get Jalin Hyatt on the field a lot more, and I'd get some of these other freshman wide receivers on the field more and see what they can do to help out a struggling quarterback.
Well, I'm on board with that. I don't know if that's Jim Chaney's call, though, just because he's calling plays. Do you think?
Well, no, and that's why I go back to I probably wouldn't take the job in the first place, because do you actually have the authority to run the offense? But if you're going to pay me over $1 million to get fired in a year, then sure, where do I sign?
Then you're headed for the beach. I think you make a great point there. Garantano has a strong arm, but he doesn't have Alabama receivers I'm talking about pre-Jalen Waddle injury, where you got 2 wideouts there that can blow by the DBs, can really stretch the field. So strong arm, I mean, he comes into play other times, but I just think that would really be a bonus. And Jalin Hyatt, I mean, just look at what he did. I know it was only a couple of plays, but what's happened with Dermell Keaton? He had 2 deep catches against Indiana in the bowl game, and he barely gets the ball now in this offense. I think he's got pretty good speed.
I don't think he's a burner, but all these guys would beat me in a foot race going away. Yeah. So I guess it's all relative.
But. Well, I guess. But no, I when you say that, I mean, I'd want to play young players now anyway. I think it's safe to say Tennessee won't win the East. isn't it? Raising your eyebrows.
I think that's safe to say at this juncture, John.
And they go to a bowl game no matter what happens.
If there's still bowl games left by that point, yeah. There's no minimum to the bowls have said that. You don't have to win half your games. Tennessee's already bowl eligible.
I don't want to get on too big a tangent here, but still, I mean, the bowls, I read these things of bowl projections. Is anybody or any fans going to a bowl game during a coronavirus pandemic?
Probably not. I would think it would be a challenge to fill 25,000 seats in a stadium for a bowl game.
So it's basically a TV event.
Which is sort of what sports have become anyway.
Yeah. And so nobody with the Chamber of Commerce in Jacksonville is going to say the Gator Bowl brings $4 billion into our economy.
I'm afraid not, no.
Okay, well, let's go back to the offense. I just don't know. I think the worst thing is to have a play caller who thinks he's being second-guessed. I can't think of a worse situation. You've got to be able to operate freely. That would be like me trying to write a column, and you're sitting over my shoulder, so, whoa, now, I don't think you need to word it that way. That's a little too strong, or that's weak. No, you've got to have freedom to call plays. And if you're dissatisfied with him and you just are insisting on making a change, then give T. Martin a shot. But I don't like this second guessing the play caller.
What do you think to me, this feels like an offense without any identity right now, John. I mean, you know, one game it seems like they're throwing it too much for Jeremy Pruitt's liking, and then in Alabama – they pretty well just turtled up and said, let's try not to lose by 40. But, you know, in the second half of the season, surely they're going to try to find an offensive identity here. I think that's one of the bigger challenges and goals, really, for this team. If they're going to jumpstart this season, I think they have to find an identity for this offense. What do you think maybe that identity is? Or I guess a better question is, what should it be?
Well, let's go back to preseason. What we thought it would be, we thought it should be, was a strong running game, control the ball, then throw off the running game with play action. I mean, that made perfectly good sense to me. Takes pressure off the quarterback, takes some pressure off the defense, but all of that depended on the offensive line knocking people off the ball, and it's not doing that. I think Tennessee's fine at running back, but it starts with the offensive line. If Tennessee can't control the line of scrimmage and run the ball, minus 1 yard against Georgia, that to me is the most damning stat of the whole season. So that to me is a hope for the second half of the season. Offensive line starts knocking people around. Tennessee runs the ball and doesn't throw on 3rd and 8. 3rd and 9, you throw on maybe 3rd and 4, you throw on 2nd and 5, but where it's not too predictable. That to me is what Tennessee has to do. It's got 5 returning starters from last year in the offensive line, and those guys need to go to work and control a line of scrimmage.
Now, we've spent 20 minutes here, John, talking about offense, and perhaps we've buried the lead because Tennessee allowed nearly 600 yards against Alabama. And, you know, I know it's Alabama, and I think everything has to be judged by a little bit of a different standard when you're going against Alabama. Allowing 587 yards is perhaps the equivalent of allowing 487 yards to a different opponent, but even that would be a ton of yards to anybody. And the heart of this defense, I think, is really concerning. And to me, as much as finding an offensive identity is really a key task for the second half of this season, I think just as important to Tennessee's chances of turning this around and maybe having a shot at finishing 500 is fixing the middle of that defense. I mean, the interior of the line has not been offering much resistance. I don't think the middle linebackers are playing very well. I mean, we've touched on Quaveris Crouch and Jeremy Banks in this podcast, but frankly, I don't think we've seen Henry Toa Toa playing at a very high level in in multiple games. And in the back end, I don't see the safeties erasing very many problems. I mean, how many times did we see Mac Jones throwing deep balls right down the middle of the field? And that wasn't the first time we've seen that this season. You know, over the middle has been susceptible all year, whether it's picking on the inside linebackers or the safeties. Is there an answer there, John, or do you think this is just going to be a lingering weakness for this defense?
After five games, it looks like a lingering weakness. I mean, Henry Toitoa, inside linebacker, is their best defensive player. No question about that. It's not even close. And he's had good games this year, but he didn't play well against Alabama. What was so striking to me in the Alabama game in terms of Tennessee defense, I just watched Alabama against Georgia's defense. I think everybody pretty much agrees that's the best defense in the conference, one of the top five defenses in the country. Mac Jones made some tremendous NFL-like throws against Georgia. Very small window, threaded the needle again and again and again. Georgia's defense wasn't playing as bad, as to me, as those stats indicated. It was a great, great exhibition of just how good of a passer Mac Jones has become. I don't think anybody saw this coming. But against Tennessee, they lose Jaylen Waddle. That's a touchdown or two against Tennessee that you just burn up. That it's not going to happen now. He's so good, and he stretches the defense and puts a lot of pressure on him. But Mac Jones would drop back to pass with no pressure, and then he would throw the ball not into a tight window, but to somebody out there kind of standing alone in a pasture with maybe a couple of cows within hearing distance and nobody else around him. I mean, Miller Forrestall, they're tight end, and who was the guy? Was it Slade Bolden who replaced Jaylen Waddle? All of a sudden, he's a household name at Alabama. He caught so many passes. But the passes they were catching were just no pressure, no coverage, wide open. And John Metchie did make a great catch between two defenders. But by and large, these guys are just roaming free out there in the secondary. And you couple that with no pass rush, and I understand Alabama has the best offensive line in the conference. It's what I thought Tennessee's offensive line might be, but that's another story. But so you just – Tennessee defensively, there's no part of the defense that played well. And they were dominated by that offensive line.
John, I want to close with this. The midpoint of the season's kind of a time to revise your predictions and expectations and what have you. At the beginning of the season, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you predicted Tennessee's record at 7-3. I predicted at 6-4.
Uh-huh.
Vols are going to have to run the table to get to 7-3. I think we can both admit that that's unlikely, and I don't think I see them getting to my 7-4 mark either. So let's revise the predictions. Where do you see Tennessee finishing this season at?
Well, first, you can count the Vanderbilt game as a win. That's one game you just – that's a freebie. Okay, well, I think 5-5 is a reasonable goal, don't you? I mean, you beat Arkansas and Auburn.
Easy breezy, right?
Easy breezy.
Yeah, I think 5-5 is still on the table. To me, I mean, I guess you could say 6-4 is the ceiling. I don't know that I see Tennessee winning 4 out of their last 5 here. I feel like 5-5 is more the reasonable goal to that could happen at this point. I think if I were to come down with a prediction, I'd probably say more 4-6. You get the win over Vanderbilt, and then split with Arkansas and Auburn, and I think they lose to Florida and A&M. So I would probably side on 4-6, but I don't think 5-5 is out of reach. You know, that'd be one game off from what I predicted going into the season. Of course, I was not chalking up a 27-point loss to Kentucky, and I don't think you were either.
No, and we were thinking when we made those predictions, did we make those predictions with a 12-game schedule or a 10-game schedule?
we made those on the 10-game schedule.
We made it on 10-game schedule. I think, though, this should have been a pretty good season for Tennessee when you look at the going into the season and starters returning, six-game winning streak to close the 2019 season. And now we're sitting here talking like 5-5 would be a good finish. That's not really closing the gap on our predictions.
It's not closing the gap on Alabama either. I mean, like you pointed out ahead of the podcast, it's like everybody else trying to catch up with this podcast. And it's just, it feels good to be in an Alabama situation and not so much the one trying to close the gap.
Yeah, with this podcast, I don't even bother looking back over my shoulder. It's no kind of like an Alabama receiver. You think he's worried about anybody catching him? Even if they do catch him, they're just going to hand the ball to Najee Harris on the next play and he'll run over people.
And even if you happen to get hurt, they'll just put in some guy named Slade Bolden in there, or whatever his name is. he'll have 100 yards receiving.
Why in the world, if you're Nick Saban, do you have Jaylen Waddle returning kicks against Tennessee? I could see doing it in a national championship game against Clemson or Ohio State. But against a 21-point underdog, what's the point of that?
A mystery for another time.
All right.
All right, John, we'll look more at that Arkansas matchup next week. But for now, that's it for this edition of the Volunteer State.